Kay, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast. I am really excited to have you on today. We have a mutual contact who said to me, you must get Kate on, which is the wonderful Anu, who I've also had on this podcast as well. So you come highly recommended, and looking at your LinkedIn profile, I can see why. You've got quite the background and quite the CV. So we're going to dive into all of this today. But Kate, first and foremost, give us introduction to Kate, your background and your own career journey. So over to you.
Wow, what a welcome. Thank you so much. It's so lovely to be here. And yes, Anu is an absolute powerhouse. I would absolutely, of course, she's like one of the most amazing women I know and truly one of the most amazing leaders I've worked with and for in my career. So that means a lot that she recommended me. So thank you, Georgie. That's lovely. Yes, I'm Kate. It's so nice to meet you and everybody listening. I'm the Director of Employee Strategy and Experience at Gilbert and Tobin. I'm also the founder of a handbag brand called SheLine, which is all about empowering women to walk fearlessly, which has evolved into now expanding into a speaker's practice called Walk Fearlessly, which to me is all about resourcefulness, strategic action, and self-leadership, and helping people take control and shape the next step.
There's going to be a lot we're going to talk about around confidence and change and the pace of life and how we can keep on adapting and evolving as human beings. But take me back to your early years as well as a lawyer. I mean, I can imagine that that was quite an interesting phase of life as well. And what did that teach you? Because I think that I've always been fascinated in law, and I think it would give you a really good grounding and foundational, I guess, knowledge and wisdom of like how to handle certain situations. So what was that first few years in your career? What did it look like as a lawyer?
For sure. Well, I didn't choose to study law so intentionally. I actually really wanted to be an actor. And my parents kind of said to me way back when I was finishing year 12, how about you do a drama major in your arts degree and do something like law? And you know, law is the closest thing to acting, so do law. To be honest with you, it is all about human behavior. I don't know that it's really, really close to acting, but I tell you what, it's absolutely given me the most amazing gift about how to approach problems, how to solve challenges, how to be solution-focused but also risk-averse, how to really understand how to get to the bottom of something and to keep digging and know you can find an answer, and a particular way of thinking, which I think is a real asset that lawyers have. But I started initially, and much like most of my career, I seem to do things very differently to other people. So I started in financial services and collapsed agri-schemes litigation and worked in that area for 4 years, deciding that I then wanted to become a fashion lawyer. I did the bar exam in New York and then transitioned into an IP team. In Australia, because the GFC had happened and there wasn't a lot of opening for international lawyers, although I did become qualified and admitted in America, and then moved into IP. So I was an IP lawyer for a couple of years after that, and then started a handbag business. I don't know whether you want to stop me there or keep going, but that's sort of the starting part of being a lawyer.
Well, the reason why I picked that out is because there's lots of talk around, you know, so I have a recruitment company, Recruiting Tech, and law seems to be one of the things that keep on coming up as like one of the skills that potentially can be replaced. But I've always thought to myself, yes, okay, so when it comes to like contracts, when it comes to sort of more of that sort of admin-y side to law, potentially, absolutely. But then there's this whole other, like you said, like human skills that you've then accumulated from that sort of qualification and now you've utilized in, I'm sure, your business and your day-to-day life. So I feel like, you know, I don't want to just have this podcast or doomsday of like all these jobs are going to be obsolete. I love what you said about, you know, we can pick all of the bits that are really impactful for life. And as human beings, we can utilize that. So I just wanted us to really start with that, because there's lots of talk right now around jobs being replaced. And I think law and that foundational skills that you just said are quite critical in the world that we're going into. But yeah, what, tell me a little bit about that. So you went to a lawyer and then you decided to start your own handbag business. What was that journey like, from like going into like, I imagine quite a bit of structure and, you know, this is when you have to come into work, this is when you leave, to all of a sudden being an entrepreneur in essence. But what was that transition look, what did that look like?
It was exactly as you say, it was moving from being taught to be like quite perfect and sort of 100% with the way that you approach things or needing the output to be right, to absolutely moving to a scrappy test, iterate, experiment, have no idea what you're doing, ace it till you make it type thing, lean in, who do you know, how can you build connections, constantly learning, constantly putting out fires. It was an incredibly steep learning curve, but oh my gosh, it just made me come alive. And I don't know that I realized how much I loved problem solving and being a business owner, where all of the accountability and the control, I suppose, creative control, but the ability to make the decisions and follow through and the buck stopping with you would affect how I operated as a lawyer as well. Because then you, I mean, as soon as you make decisions and it impacts whether you make or lose money, you become a lot more commercial about your whole perspective on every other area of your life. And I did stop law entirely when I started the business, but my husband had become quite comfortable with our dual salary, and all of a sudden I sort of wasn't making the millions that I had foreshadowed I would immediately make when starting the handbag business. That we decided collectively, you know, I would go back and do a flexible part-time role and have a salary that was, you know, sort of a baseline salary 3 days a week and continue to build the business as well. And again, that's a very different way of doing things too. I can't say it was the easiest way to build a business, because then you're not 100% focused on the business. But I think that naturally taught me to be intrapreneurial within a business and entrepreneurial with my business, and then the two became mutually reinforcing. And I would learn parallel things from both places that strengthened and weaponized the way I saw things in either case to become more effective and more resourceful and see patterns and opportunities that I wouldn't have otherwise seen, because I didn't have this other experience, let alone them running in parallel. And I suppose that I would love to pick up on the thing that you mentioned earlier around lawyers and AI and that profession being a profession that's susceptible to disruption. And I think we are, but I think it's an incredible opportunity, because I don't think it's a doomsday thing. I think it's an augmentation thing. And I think it's going to be incredible to be able to hand off some of the cognitive load and feel like it's all going to be possibly more accurate than a human can create, but then the human element of the critical thinking and the strategic thinking and the creativity and the experience that people have with lawyers will be so important. And I think you have to understand all of those pieces to be able to architect that in a way where it's differentiated and special and makes you stand out in the market. So it'll be the lawyers that augment with the AI rather than being displaced. The ones who'll be displaced or disrupted will be the ones that don't embrace the tech.
Absolutely. And it's going to be across all industries, which we're sort of going to go on to speak about later. But one thing I absolutely love what you just said then is when, because I think companies can be quite short-sighted in some ways. Like, for example, like I work in recruitment, like I said. So if I send a resume of somebody that's also got like a side hustle, instantly, sometimes the client can say, oh, how dedicated are they going to be to this organization? I say, flip your mindset and your perception here, because this person, the biggest learning and growth you can ever go through is trying to start your own business. Yes. And I feel like, as you would know, I have made every mistake there is to be made. I have also learned so much, but like the commercials and the tax and the bookkeeping and the accounting. And oh my God, like when you start a business, you are literally in charge of everything, correct?
Yeah, all of them. Yeah.
And you're just sort of like failing, hopefully forward, and stumbling and learning and growing. But I think it's, you've pinpointed some really important points that, you know, when it comes to the hiring point of view, don't rule out people that have got other passions and side hustles, because like you said, they can be such an asset to the business, because you take all that knowledge that you're learning from the side hustle, you're applying it into the corporate world or whatever job that you're in. And that is so valuable. So yeah, I think that's just a really key piece I wanted to pull out from what you were just saying then. The other thing that I just sort of want to go into now is, like, obviously you started the handbag business. How has that evolved over time? Because now obviously you've gone into like more speaking, and where does this passion come for, like, encouraging people to step out of that comfort zone and walk fearlessly, as the business is called?
Well, the handbags came from always having a passion for fashion, as my parents like to tell people, which is so awkward. but I'm also, and still now, and I'm like, you know, 40. I think I've always really enjoyed being able to express myself creatively. And I felt that there was a huge gap missing back in 2015. You know, you'd go to work back then. I mean, it almost sounds like a lifetime ago now in terms of how far the tech's come. But we did carry paperwork, and we did have big laptops that were heavy. And, you know, I don't know whether you had one, Georgie, but it was like one of those big black laptop bags that had the dual zip that was like huge with the really unattractive shoulder strap. And then you'd have your beautiful handbag, which was not made to carry anything heavy and would break if you put stuff in it that was too heavy. And then you'd have your lunchbox, and then maybe your broad bag for your shoes. And if you're really great, maybe you had a gym bag. And then by that point, you're well and truly the bag lady, and your power suit was no longer very powerful. And I was just so frustrated that there wasn't an option that catered more to that working woman's lifestyle. And so that's where the bag brand was born. And then obviously the way we work has completely moved. And I think, you know, we're obviously in a work design moment post-pandemic. I mean, we proved we could do things that we never thought possible in lockdown. And particularly coming from Victoria myself, you know, we had some of the longest lockdowns. And so all different industries had to essentially go from the Flintstones to the Jetsons overnight. And a lot of people proved that they could do that, and they could be productive and work from home and work in very different ways. And the implication of that at the time was that people didn't need handbags to take them to and from the office, because the pain point I solved was essentially commuting and organization. So that the woman felt empowered to walk fearlessly, because they could pull out whatever they needed when they needed it with distinctive organization within their handbag. But if you're working from home, the problem that I solved disappeared very quickly in COVID, and I knew that I'd have to have a different value proposition, or the business would be dead. And I suppose that was, again, another turning point, because I knew that I needed to create a different product for the business to survive. And so that was an amazing journey, having that happen. And then now coming back into, you know, the time we find ourselves in now, what we want from our handbag has completely changed. So I made the decision to slow down to accelerate, because I feel like, honestly, one of the biggest lessons I've learned from running a business is actually, instead of trying to keep pace with the change, is to actually stop and have a look at the bigger picture. And you know, where are you within this, what feels like chaos, and what's within your control and what's outside of your control, and how can you shape your next steps, and how can you be more intentional about what's going to create value, and own that step, I think. And so now the bags have been minimized so that I'm refocusing on the problem, because I had a painkiller, and now I've got a vitamin. Through that process, I got asked to speak quite a bit, and speaking is a lot like acting. And so the speaker's practice sort of slowly started to build, and then now I've become more intentional about wrapping the brand around the two, and hopefully building the bag business back up once I can recalibrate exactly what the new pain point is. But in the meantime, speaking about strategic thinking frameworks so that other people can unlock that in their context.
Yeah, I can see beautifully how it all ties together. And if you continue to build up your brand and, you know, then people will come and hear you speak. And then it's like, oh, what else can I buy from Kate? And oh, she's got this amazing handbag. And oh God, that really speaks to me because I'm a, you know, career professional and that I need something like that in my life. So it just makes so much sense. But, you know, I think like, this is a true, it's been a true test of everybody. And I think COVID tested everyone in different ways, but especially entrepreneurs and small businesses, which obviously I am and you are a small business owner. And I think like what was really interesting is that, you know, I think that, you know, we don't grow when things are easy, we grow when things are challenging. And I think so many people had to step up and had to completely pivot and reinvent themselves during that time. So I just want to like take a moment to say, you know, incredible work that you identified quickly, right? I need to zoom out here because the easiest thing to do would have been just to kind of like keep going, right? You know, we'll be back at work and everyone's going to want to have a new handbag and everyone's going to want to do this and this and almost like try and predict and control everything. But instead you zoom down, you're like, let's just pause. What actually does the world need right now? And actually what they probably needed was a bit of like reinforcement, a bit of confidence, a bit of like motivation again. Because I do think people have lost that a little bit from just sort of speaking to a few people in my network that they sort of have got, they've adopted a bit of fear. They've adopted a bit of like scarcity because we've been through so much as a society over the last few years. So I feel like where you're navigating now is really, really needed in the world. So what
likewise,
are you hearing?
What you're doing, Georgie, it's wonderful what you're doing.
Thank you. I try. But what are you hearing when you're speaking, engaging in your community? What are some like patterns of thinking and what are some common fears that come up that you go, oh, okay, that sort of seems to be reoccurring? Is there any sort of like, yeah, patterns that you could share with us?
I think it's really interesting how we've absolutely very naturally moved more into this gig economy type of space, but the portfolio careers are now becoming really, really in vogue. And I think that there is so much that big businesses can gain from that. I can't remember who mentioned it and I feel terrible not being able to name them, but someone on LinkedIn was talking about how maybe the future of work is going to move more into a space of how big film productions work, where everybody sort of has a clear role and it's very much a cross-functional group of people, but they come together for a project and then they all know their roles and how they contribute and how they fit together and then they disperse again. And I wonder whether we will move more into that type of space because that really makes a lot of sense. I mean, I appreciate that we'll still be a bit of a way off. But there is definitely so much to be gained from having people come together from different spaces that see things differently, that have expertise, you know, in one space, but ideally multiple spaces and own a particular role, but maybe a multidisciplinary, and come together and work with people with fresh eyes. That just makes such a big, I think that's been the biggest gift of, you know, building a business and running a business in a widget space and then navigating into a services space while operating in a resource-rich service offering business. It's just been so helpful to be able to see how different businesses create and capture value and be able to actually understand the different business models and be able to navigate that better in different environments and pick things from different spaces to optimize how things are done that may not have been done that way before purely because you've seen something differently in another context that you can then leverage.
It's going to be a really interesting world. And I completely agree with you about the gig economy. And I think like we've started in our business, been asked for a lot more contractors, you know, so like, you know, products and pieces of work. And, you know, like for example, we're working with a client at the moment that's doing a big tech transformation. And instead of adding loads of new headcounts, because they know that like, there's just some key things that need to happen to make this product a success. So they need people to come in with certain expertise and certain like new ways of thinking and things, but they don't necessarily want to add to the headcount then pay a full-time salary. So they're just sort of getting people in on 3 to 6 or 12 month contracts to help them out on a piece of work or a tech transformation. I think that what I'm sort of trying to, I guess, encourage people to do is be almost become like experts, to really drill down on like, what are your strengths? What are you good at? And what can you offer? What value can you offer a business? Because if you're super clear on that, and that's your brand and that's your identity, you could have a very, very thriving career. But it's like the generalists that sort of like go, oh, I'm a bit of this, I'm a bit of that, and a bit of this, that I go, well, as we move forward into this new economy and this new way of thinking and this new way of working, you need to kind of, I think, pick one and almost be like a career craftsman in that. That's what I'm sensing in the marketplace right now. It's like, Georgie, we need someone with this and this. Yeah.
Wow. See, that's so interesting because I feel like I have a totally different perspective to that.
Interesting. Yeah, I work in tech though, so it's very much like we need somebody with this expertise. Machine learning, AI, prompt engineering, you know, but it seems to be coming, but that might change. But right now, it seems to be certain skills and tech that keeps on coming up as opposed to somebody that's worked in all areas of technology, which has been quite new. But then on the flip side, I can imagine other industries are really sort of looking for people who can wear multiple hats. And I guess it also depends on the size of the business as well, right? Because if you're a big business, you can sort of like go in and, you know, not need to wear multiple different hats. But if you're a smaller business, you might need somebody that's got multiple different skills so can, you know, ad hoc and jump in as well needed. But curious to get your insights as well, because I love hearing from different perspectives that are outside tech and the world that I play in.
No, I think your perspective is incredibly valid. And I completely understand how you would need that deep expertise, much like I think, you know, totally the same in law firms, you need the deep expertise in the particular area. But I think increasingly going forward, you will have to have at least one deep piece of expertise, but arguably some other strings to your bow, which separate you. So it's kind of like those neo-generalists are kind of coming back up. And we're kind of, I suppose, if you're looking further ahead with how much generative AI is taking on in terms of cognitive ability and knowledge, the knowledge market, knowledge workers, it's how important will it be to have the knowledge, because it's so abundant now. It's going to be what other skills are less likely to be leveraged using AI that will become more important. So it will be more around that creative, critical thinking, analytical thinking, interpersonal skills, empathy, experience design, those pieces that we'll probably get to with AI, but hopefully not just yet, but maybe not yet. Those things, I feel like, I mean, I don't know how far off they are, but at the moment, you know, you can get AI to do so much, and you need to have deep expertise to be able to prompt correctly. But how long is that going to be the case? Like, we're moving forward so quickly and knowledge is so readily available, whereas sort of previously, even 5 years ago, it was all about, you know, you being the expert in that space and having the deepest expertise. And now that's less of a competitive factor because there's just so much available.
Yeah. You and I are completely on the same page, by the way. So when I think about skills, I think about hard skills, which is like the tech component. And I think about soft skills, and critical skills, human skills. Do you know, it's funny because I actually did a post the other day about why they should be trained to soft skills, but everybody knows then there's that still. So I'm sort of utilizing the language.
The soft ones are hard.
Exactly. Yeah. And they are. And let's talk about that in a second. But when I sort of am taking like job briefs, like it's very much like we need somebody to be really good at this. And that's like the tech side, but also we want somebody that's got, you know, great leadership ability, you know, empathy, critical thinking, problem solving. So you're absolutely right. These human skills, critical skills, are becoming equally as important as the harder, you know,
technical skills.
Yeah, but they both sort of are kind of balancing each other out. But I'm thinking, on the hard skill front, I think it's important to not be a generalist now. I think you need to just pick your lane on that, but develop your human skills around, you know, your empathy, your leadership, your critical thinking, problem solving. So we are 100% on the same page of that. So how does somebody do that? Because this gets talked about a lot on the podcast, and we say all the time, we're looking for leaders with empathy, we're looking for good communicators, we're looking for people who can problem solve. How do you encourage people to actually work on this and develop these critical, human, important skills?
I think the best piece of advice, I think, in this space, and I've totally just learned it the hard way, much like I'm sure you have, is when you build a business, because you're like the person building the business initially anyway, you are the business. And so if you start thinking about yourself as a business, you actually behave quite differently. And again, if you go into that piece where all the decisions that you make force you to become more commercial, you become more conscious of the way that you show up. And so I think a huge part of it is actually being aware that you show up in different ways and that people perceive different things about you in different situations depending on the way that you show up. And that being more intentional about the way you show up and being more emotionally regulated, which is totally something that you have to practice daily, particularly when you have like a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old as well. But I feel like, yeah, like my negotiation skills I thought were excellent, and now they're a whole nother level because I have, 2 children who ask so many questions and they're more curious than me. And I feel like that's excellent training to become more patient and more creative with the answers that I have. And I don't know, I feel like clarity doesn't come before action. I think it comes from action. So I think you have to get in the arena and practice. And then I think you have to reflect and think about, okay, I had a really hard conversation. That was really hard. But good on me, I didn't skirt around it. I didn't avoid it. Okay, what happened in that situation? Did I anchor myself in curiosity or was I really triggered? Was I just trying to win or was I actually listening? And what worked and what didn't work and what else would I do differently? And actually being intentional about reflecting on those different sort of soft skill interactions that are not soft, that are very hard, and being more conscious about what works for you and where you felt you had a win or where you felt you definitely did not and you won't do it that way again. But I don't feel like you learn heaps until you muck it up a bit and then you try something else and you test and iterate all the time. And the other piece is that I think that because we are in this state of flux and there is so much advancement with technology and people are more on their phone, I don't know. I think we're a bit, and we had that huge lockdown, I think we're all a bit out of practice. So I really advocate for the fact that, you should try and strike up conversations when you're in line waiting for a coffee, or you should try and have more small talk at the dry cleaner or whatever other life admin piece you have, so that you can test and iterate and work on what's working in lots of different contexts that are low stakes.
I think that's really practical advice because you're touching on something that, again, I think is really important. It is the whole self-awareness piece, because we can't change what we don't know what needs to be changed, right? So it's like that whole self-reflection and getting to the end of the day and thinking, okay, how have I shown up today? What kind of person have I been today? Where did I fall short today? Right, I had that really challenging conversation with Sally. Could I have done better there? Or like, could I have listened more? Or could I have been more empathetic in that situation? But in our busy lives, I think this is what I hear all the time. It's like, people don't have the opportunity. And maybe this is a bit of an excuse. I think everyone can find the time. Like you just said then, you've got a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. So your life is busy, plus you're running your own business and, plus you're in corporate and all the rest of the things. But I'm sure that we could all carve out just a few moments at the end of the day. 10 minutes.
I reckon do it on a Monday. 10 mm-hmm. And it's like about working on your business, as in your mm-hmm. personal business, your personal enterprise. What worked well and what maybe didn't work as well. So what did you learn? And then how would you apply it in a different situation based on the week prior, with the interactions you had with people, with anything that you found challenging, with anything that came up that you're still thinking about from the former week? why are you still thinking about it? And what can you take out of it? Where is your stop meeting?
And that's really important as well, because I think what people do is they marinate in what's happened. They beat themselves up, they're self-critical, and then that then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, and they focus on all the things that are getting wrong as opposed to all the things that are going really well. And I do think, and I'm, again, I love your thoughts on this as well, I do think we're wired to be that way. I think, like human beings, it's an active pursuit to focus on what we have, to focus on the positivity. I think our brains are wired to protect us, so naturally they're going to go to what's wrong or what's not working. I think we really have to be very intentional to be like, this is what is working. And I found that starting my own business, wow, this has been the biggest journey for me. And let's sort of go here as well, because I'm happy to be vulnerable, right? I would beat myself up, you know, every week, you know, I haven't done enough, you know, I haven't reached out to enough clients, I haven't sent enough candidates, I haven't done this, I haven't done this. And I would have a habit of focusing on the things that had gone wrong that week. And then I'm so pleased that I caught it, because if I had continued to do that, I probably have ended up only being in the business for a year or two and then been like, I can't do this anymore. But I just gave myself so much grace in the beginning as well. And I did stuff up and I did make huge mistakes. But it's all part of the learning process. And
absolutely,
I think this is where so many people go wrong. So how can we reframe things? I think this is like, we don't see reality as a reality. We see it through the lens we look through it. And I think this is one thing that I always tell myself, like, what are you focusing on, Georgina? Are you focusing on all the things that haven't gone well this week and just instantly feeling not good, or you're focusing on things that are going well? And I think we have to be very aware of where we're placing our attention. But I'd love to know your journey on this, because I'm sure as a business owner.
I mean, how long have you got? I have made so many. Probably one of the best ones was like launching the business and inviting everyone that I knew, and no media. No PR, no one to report about the event. And then I was just like unbelievably lucky that two or three people that came were reporters. But like the problem is, you don't know what you don't know when you start a business. And I think you've got to be open to that, which is why you've got to have this awareness. You've got to practice being more conscious of the bigger picture. And I feel like the only way I can do that is to have a stop. Like to actually stop, to recalibrate and pause. And if you do that reflection piece, also that action, it's again, action gives you the clarity. It's the action also gives you information, and that information reduces the fear. And I think it's about practicing, instead of like, what's the worst thing that could happen, which absolutely as a lawyer, you're trying to see and spot all the risks. It's been a very conscious process of being, well, in fact, what's the best thing that could happen? And, you know, arguably being pragmatic and realistic, it's going to be somewhere between the two. But rather than anchoring into, oh my God, what's the nightmare? Everything's burning. Everything is fine. You know that meme. It's going to be like, what's the abundant piece? Like if anything was possible and there were no obstacles, what is the absolute best outcome? And then how do I position myself to better attain that, rather than entertaining the nightmare as much? And then you're probably going to land a bit higher towards the best possible outcome, if not at the best possible outcome. And then it kind of shrinks the nightmare, or it just gives you a more pragmatic view about how realistic the nightmare is, and maybe you completely catastrophized it and now you've said it out loud and written it down. It's you know, it's on a scale of 1 to 10, it's probably not likely to happen at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I was just sort of smiling because I just think that it's just every single person that's ever pushed themselves to do something uncomfortable, we're going to have to deal with things. Like, I feel like unresolved trauma comes up, you know, like things that we haven't dealt with. And, oh, I didn't know I was still hanging on to that, you know, like all these things will sort of pop up. And, but I think that there's beauty in that as well. And I think that so many people, and going back to like walking fearlessly wise, I just love the brand name, is that we do have to walk fearlessly, because we are always going to come up against ourselves and come up against things that perhaps we haven't dealt with. Perhaps we've, you know, it's still in our subconscious somewhere. But if we don't go for things, if we don't put our hands up for that promotion, if we don't start that business, if we don't try and progress in some areas of our life, you miss it and you live with regret and then you end up not developing, and what a boring life that would be. So how can we start to really confront our fears, and what do you sort of see as some of the common fears that maybe held you back but also hold so many people back as well? Is there any sort of like key sort of insights there?
I can't speak for other people, but I think definitely for myself, it was originally like a fear of failure. And then I think the biggest gift of my career journey, to be honest, was publicly telling everybody I was going to do the bar exam in New York and then very publicly failing it. And I never thought I would get over that. And then having to pick myself back up and then redo the exam to then pass, was like, oh, well, then I can do anything after this. I was so embarrassed and so, it was such a big public failure that now it's like, well, I'm not worried about it because like, no one really cared. Like, I mean, I really cared. It was a massive blow to my ego. But at the end of the day, nobody really cared. And in fact, it was such a powerful thing to have experienced as someone who hadn't really failed anything major, let alone anything publicly like that. And in fact, to have failed by such a small amount, but like it doesn't matter at the end of the day, either you're in or you're not, was the best thing that could have happened to me. Because I think after that, I completely lent in to, well, you know, the thing is, if it doesn't go right or if it doesn't go the way that I'm thinking it will, I can course correct. It's not the end of the day. Like I can recalibrate, I can fix. And I think the thing is also the gift of starting a business and actually having a role and then being quite intentional about having a leadership trajectory in tandem is that, you know, anything is possible if you set your mind to it. And it's about how you understand the different perspectives that you're standing in and how you can create value in different spaces so that everybody wins. Like, can you make it a win-win so that people want to back you? And most of the time you can. And then I think having accountability, which is what comes from running a business, because there is no one else if you're the CEO and you're the owner, it does stop with you. But carrying that into other spaces, I think people really respect that and they give you a lot more space and runway to do different things and to experiment when you own the accountability and they know that you'll course correct and they know that you're trying to create value for them.
Amazing. And just so, yeah, perfectly put. And I think that fear of failure, fear of what other people think. What are people going to think about me? And like you said, people don't care. People aren't thinking.
They're all the protagonist in their own story. They're all their own hero. They're not worried about you. You're like the, you know, the sub character in like the last scene and then you left the room.
Exactly. And I think it's just such a powerful reminder because you also said something at the start about like being in the arena. And if I ever ask for advice from somebody, I will always make sure that the advice is somebody who's also been in the arena.
Yes.
And they might be in the arena at that time I'm in it, or they might have been in the arena or come out of the arena. But I think that we're just too quick to judge ourselves and too quick to get advice from those that have never done anything outside their comfort zone. And you're just not going to get the right piece of advice from somebody that's not walked, you know, the way you want to walk. You know, you want to go and find somebody that's climbed the Everest, climbed that mountain and say, hey, how have you done it? What did you learn along the way? And I think that that's been a really important part of my journey as well, as like learning from others. And you don't have to have all the answers. You never will.
Oh, 100%. Having the vulnerability to ask. Like say, I don't actually know the answer. I would love your advice. Like people feel so thrilled to want to help you. Like most people go out of their way to help you. And that has been an amazing experience as well. And a lot of people that maybe you don't even know very well will go out of their way to help you if you're willing to be vulnerable and say, I don't know. And I feel like all of those lessons that you've talked about just now, that's so much of what I'm trying to do in Walk Fearlessly, is to create this sort of framework where people can step into how to become an opportunity architect and how can they see more and how can they solve faster and then how can they shape what's next? How can they really take accountability of that? How can they own that resourcefulness and be more strategic and bold in their action and then get the outcome that they'd most like?
I think it all comes from just that self-trust that I really want to try and identify, because I am fascinated by human beings, and I'm fascinated why some people go on and achieve amazing things in their life and other people struggle and just can't seem to get ahead and they always self-sabotage. And it is really, really interesting. And I think I put it down to sort of the first thing. There's a reason why I call this podcast Career Confidence. And I think confidence comes from courage. It's a skill that we develop. It's something that we first and foremost have to have the belief in ourselves to take the first step. And that's tough, but you did it. But if you hadn't have done it, you wouldn't be where you are today and be the person that you are as well. So how can we encourage, and this is sort of, I guess, something we can both sort of riff off and chat about, but how have you spoken to yourself? Like what, within those times of doubt when that fear creeps in, how do you overcome that imposter syndrome? How do you overcome that negative thought that's sort of saying, you're not good enough, you're not going to achieve this? Like, how have you gone about backing yourself and having that belief in your capability?
I think I've been very fortunate to be part of a family who has totally cultivated a space where anything is possible with guts and determination. I could write, like my grandfather used to say that, my mother would say it all the time. My whole family was all about that, is all about that. After that, though, I think confidence is something somebody else sees in you. I don't know that it's necessarily something that you can manifest in the same way. It's sort of like a byproduct of having strong capability or feeling like you have the knowledge to move forward or feeling like you've had such an extreme case of failure before that you're not worried about it ever being like that again, so you're not scared. So without having to do the extreme failure piece like I did, I think another way to do it would be to continue to build your capability and build your skills, because you feel more confident naturally when you feel like you know what it is that you need to be doing, or you know more about how you're going to be doing it, or you feel safe enough to ask. And then I think it's really important to understand your playing field. So I think that's about knowing the context that you're in, understanding the players and the dynamics, so that you've got more detail about that bigger picture, but also the nuance. And then I think it's about actually focusing outward and it being more on contribution. And I think that you feel more confident when you can see the value that you've brought to others. And it's about, how can I best support others? How can I best lift others and create value for others? Because the way that you capture value seems to obviously differ with each business model, but provided you're creating value, it just comes back regardless. Like, I think that there's so much to be said for putting good out into the world and it coming back in ways that you would never have thought possible, and doing things, not expecting things in return, but doing things with a long-term view that, you know, it, you pay it forward, and the most incredible things happen from one little ripple over here that ends up coming, like, just phenomenal things happen when you do small things.
Yeah, you're touching on something really important. I think contribution is something that doesn't get spoken about enough. And I also think it's really like the art of fulfillment in life. Like, you know, I think if I reflect back on my early career as in sales, which ultimately was what recruitment was, it was very much more mostly about me. What am I going to get? How much commission am I going to make? And that was almost encouraged in the business that I used to work for. Going on the journey from starting CH Solutions was a massive humbling experience. Like, I mean, God, I went from thinking I was like, you know, this top salesperson to quickly realizing that I knew nothing.
No, were a top salesperson. You just naturally had the whole start of business thing happen to you, but you're still top performing salesperson.
Yes, true. I still had the sales component, but I was falling flat on my face multiple times in the day and learning all these new things about how to run a business. But yeah, it was really a humbling experience. But the biggest thing for me, I think over the last few years, if I really think back about what's maybe increased my self-belief and confidence, is exactly what you've just said about the contribution and seeing, for example, Sisterhood Club, starting the podcast, starting the event, starting the mentorship piece. and hearing the feedback from the women that we've helped, that to me has been the biggest boost of confidence ever out of everything I've done. So it's really interesting that you just said that.
The impact, because you can see the impact that you've created, and it speaks for itself, and it's objective, and it's outside of you, but it's something that you've helped build. And it's so powerful, Jordy. That's amazing what you've built, truly amazing. And then to have all these women's lives enriched from what you've done, like that's fantastic. I think when the focus is on something that's bigger than you but that energizes you, that's where the confidence comes from, because then the feedback is from all these alternative sources and multiple touch points. There's no way that you couldn't feel confident. And I don't know that you feel confident. I think you just feel strong and capable.
And you, like I said, you feel that fulfillment, because I don't know about you, but you know, when I've gone on to do things, and for me, I've got to the end of the goal that I've set out and I've gone, oh, is this all there is? You know, I was expecting to feel something else more right now. Absolutely. But that whole entrepreneurship is a really, it can be quite a lonely road. And I think that's why, like, I love speaking to other people that have sort of gone on that path and done it. And you know, what you're doing in your business is contributing and helping. And I think it's just such an amazing feeling. So going on to like the business, like where's it at today? What's and I guess like what are you continuing to learn about yourself, about others, about, you know, what it actually takes to be a successful entrepreneur?
Well, I feel like you learn that forever. I don't think that ever ends. I think as just as you've said, we're so aligned. It's so much more about the journey than the outcome. Like, it's so much more about the journey. And I think it's about making sure that you're enjoying the journey and that you're feeling like you're fueled to be curious, and you're feeling like you are fulfilled and feeling engaged, and that you're having an impact that's bigger than yourself. And you really only live once. So I think that, you know, if you are thinking about doing something, you know, take a small step, like take a small bit, have a small experiment, do something where you can sort of have a proof of concept, or have an MVP, something little that you can test the water if you're scared of going any further forward. Or, you know, do something like me where you have, you know, a flexible role and you have an amazingly progressive employer who actually let you do that way before it was ever a thing. And try and test something yourself and really give it a go, or go all in.
Absolutely. And I guess the final sort of thing I want to sort of finish on, I think that, you know, we are a product of our habits and what we do daily as well. And I think that I probably didn't realize this as much until probably 7 years ago, when, you know, I probably could have been on the verge of burnout had I not implemented a few wellness practices into my life. What do you do daily? Because you've got, you know, two young children, a job, a business. How are you blending all of this? How are you managing? How are you in it all as well, making sure that you're not overflowing and you are sort of topped up, and, you know, you're looking after yourself as well?
That's a good question, because I feel like it is definitely a blend rather than a balance.
I don't like balance. I think we need to scrap that word.
I think it's unattainable. It's a blend. And it's so kind of like a blend that has different textures every week and every day. And I think it's probably more around checking in with yourself and moderating, because I'm very much an active do person and I can do too much. And I think I need to be more conscious of where I'm at and how I am and my energy levels, and then recalibrating, you know, week on week. It's not always possible to recalibrate, you know, quickly when you work for someone else and when you're managing priorities for other people, or little people. But I think you need to be conscious of where your energy levels are, and exactly as you say, making sure that you're looking after yourself, and which is easier said than done. But exercise is really important, and something that I'm trying to get back into again. And I really love reading. I feel like reading is my special space. And so I often read at night, and I feel like that really helps me And also catching up with people. I'm a big extrovert, if you haven't realized that already. And so I get so much energy from having conversations with people and, you know, talking about different perspectives and, you know, what people think about philosophical things. And, yeah, that's heaps of fun for me. So I think, you know, I'm quite probably a very large nerd at heart. And then dancing. I feel like I love any opportunity to go out dancing. And I truly am one of those people who will dance and not care if you're watching me. And that's the best release. Going out and dancing and just like letting it all out is so great. And that's why the other thing I do is I wear a lot of sequins. I love dopamine dressing. I know I'm not a perfect example today, but pretty much anybody that I work with in the firm, if you ask them, they would be like, oh, yes, she wears sequins all the time. And I try to wear sequins whenever I speak. So, yeah, little things that make a difference for you.
I love that. And I think that's just ultimately staying so true to you and your authenticity as well. And I think you've identified so many things there that fill your cup, make you happy, and it's staying true to who you are. And I think maybe a bit like you as well. Like I love having deep conversations. That's why I love how the podcast, like I get to be really nosy for an hour. I get to like, you know, oh, let's talk about this. And what do you think about this? And I love it. I don't like surface level conversations. And I'm probably a bit of a nerd at heart as well, because I read, I listen, I'm obsessed with, you know, just high performance and getting that sort of 1% better each day. And yeah, I think it's really fascinating. But final sort of question, like, is there anything that you recommend our listeners to dive into more, to listen to, like anything that's helped you develop your skills and your self-belief or your mindset, like anything that you can sort of leave us with that would really help them to be the best versions of themselves?
I think one of the things that completely changed my career trajectory totally is what you touched on, and it was about not trying to fit a mold anymore. And I think when you're able to accept yourself in all of your quirks and what makes you you, that's when you truly thrive. And not being too hard on yourself for being different, because everybody is different. And I think then you're more open to opportunity, you're more open to others, you're more open to seeing things around you. And then that's where all this amazing possibility and potential turns into incredible things that are tangible, and you can actually grab them because it is uniquely you, and you are uniquely positioned to harness those things. And another way to do that is to continually build your network and meet people in spaces that are not where you operate. So intentionally go out of your way once a month to go to an event that you would never normally go to, and take someone you don't know very well along with you, with the idea that they're going to take you to something random that you wouldn't otherwise go to, and introduce you to someone else that you don't know. And then that's this just wonderful flow-on effect where you keep going into all these amazing spaces and meeting people you wouldn't otherwise meet in industries you wouldn't otherwise go and look at, and then you learn these things that you wouldn't otherwise know. It's just this perfect way to keep expanding your brain, expanding your network, expanding your vision. And it helps you be more uniquely you, because you have to introduce yourself and who you are in all of these spaces. And I think that's dynamic too, and that changes, and it comes back to what you were saying before. You need to be able to articulate, you know, what your values are and what your strengths are and what lights you up and where you want to go and what success looks like for you. And that's totally fine if that's dynamic, and it might change week in, week about, or it might be with the seasons. But I think being able to articulate it in a way that lands, particularly as a woman, and being able to advocate for what you want and having a great network of people around you are game changers.
I completely agree. I think that's such a powerful place, powerful place to leave. And, you know, I think when I reflect back, I think the best thing I ever did was really understand myself at a deeper level and what lights me up, and not, and like you said, what success actually means to me, because we live in a society now, it's so easy to compare. But actually, we don't know how that person's got to where they are and the sacrifices they've had to make, and you might not be prepared to make them. So why on earth are you comparing yourself to somebody that you don't know? And you just can't, because we've all got a different set of values and different sets of needs. And, you know, we can't just sit here and go, oh, look at them, look at all the success they've had, but they live a completely different life to you. So I think you've got to really get intentional of like what lights you up and what your key values are and what you want your life to look. And I think, yeah, that's definitely been a big, big journey for me, and still is, because it, like you say, it's dynamic. It changes all the time. Kate, I could honestly sit and chat to you all day. I feel like there is just so many, lots of different conversations we could have had today, but I've thoroughly enjoyed chatting with you. But
likewise,
for those that want to find out more about you and what you do, where can I send people to connect? Where do you hang out the most?
Probably LinkedIn, to be honest, at the moment. Definitely come and connect with me on LinkedIn. I would love to connect with people. Otherwise, you can have a look at my website at walkfearlessly.com.au, and Sheila and Bags are within there as well. But LinkedIn is probably where you can find me personally the fastest.
Amazing. We'll link all of those below. But thank you so much, Kate. It's been a pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure was entirely mine, Georgie. Looking forward to another conversation with you very soon.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me, and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant, and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you. Thank you.